I think slicing a ball defensively is usually, at least for me, easier and a little more effective than hitting topspin defensively. So it's never going to be such a blanket statement as, you know, when you're on offense, you want to be using topspin, and when you're on defense, you want to be using slice. It's a lot more nuanced than that, but I would say for the most part, when you're on defense, it's easier to hit slice, and when you're on offense, it's easier to hit topspin. All right, guys, we have another episode of the James Ignatowicz Show. We are in Virginia Beach. So Virginia Beach, Virginia, this is, I think, the first time I've ever been here. And it is, you know, maybe not my favorite place that I've been to so far, but it's not bad. It's got a nice, the courts are very nice. And anyway, who cares? We're just going to get into the good stuff. A couple more drills that I've been doing, a couple more things to focus on with dinking. So dinking is something that you're going to have to do, something that matters a lot. And one of the things that I've noticed, just doing drills with dinks specifically where one player is slicing and then one player is hitting topspin every single time. So I think that's important because it is very tough to go topspin off of topspin. So what that means is if I had a dink with topspin, then for you to impart topspin off of that dink can be pretty tough because those two spins are competing. So if you guys know about what spin continuation is, spin continuation just means that my slice, right, the spin that's going this way, is your topspin. So if I slice a dink to you, it's actually easier for you to hit topspin on that dink. And of course, after a slice, the ball will bounce, and then that slice will sort of maybe stop. Maybe the ball will be kind of flat. Oftentimes you'll notice that if somebody slices a dink after it bounces, it'll lose the slice, but it won't have a ton of topspin on it either. It'll have sort of like a flat, maybe a little bit of topspin, which is much different than if somebody has a ton of topspin on their dink, and then it bounces, then it's got even more topspin. So that's actually a lot tougher to impart topspin off of than a slice dink. So I think we should do this when we drill, and this is something that I do very often, as follows, where I will hit, for example, only slice dinks, and then Max will hit only topspin dinks. Or vice versa. I'll only hit topspin, and then Max, my drilling partner, will only hit slice dinks. So the reason that we do that, and the reason I think it's important, is once you're really caught entrenched in a rally of dinking, or if somebody hits a ball with a lot of slice to you, obviously there are going to be times where you feel more comfortable hitting a slice off of slice. But I think that it's good to train yourself to hit topspin very often when somebody slices the ball to you. I think that would be also the easiest time to hit topspin. I think that generally topspin is a better way to be aggressive. If you want to be aggressive, topspin's better. And everybody's asking you, how do I get topspin? Because everybody thinks it's better than slice. Well, it's not across the board better than slice. There are times where slice is better. But I would say that topspin, in general, if you want to be aggressive, is better. So, okay. Why would we then do this drill where I only hit slice and then Max only hits topspin? It's to condition yourself, for Max at least, to condition himself to get used to always hitting topspin when I hit slice. Because I think that when somebody slices the ball to you, that is your opportunity to impart topspin on the ball, whether it's off of a return. You know, generally, this will happen more often when somebody dinks it to you. But I think that the first player to impart topspin on the ball in a dinking rally is... I'm not going to say they're going to win more often because it depends on who it is, but I would say I'd rather be the guy that's hitting the topspin dink than the slice dink. Okay, and there are some great slice dinkers, obviously Ben. There are amazing slice dinkers, but just me personally, I know from what I've seen, the player that imparts topspin first will win more often than not. So, somebody slices it to you, get very comfortable hitting some topspin off of that ball. The other thing there too is, for me, if somebody's hitting a very aggressive topspin dink to me, for the most part, I will probably look to slice it back at least one time. I think slicing a ball defensively is usually, at least for me, easier and a little more effective than hitting topspin defensively. So it's never going to be such a blanket statement as, you know, when you're on offense, you want to be using topspin, and when you're on defense, you want to be using slice. It's a lot more nuanced than that, but I would say for the most part, when you're on defense, it's easier to hit slice, and when you're on offense, it's easier to hit topspin. So that's why we do that drill. So for example, we would do it this way. So if I'm the one that's slicing and I'm the one that's on defense, I'm going to dink every single ball to Max's inside foot, my training partner's inside foot. Reason for that is mostly with your slice dinks, you're going to want to send them either cross court or to the middle, to the inside foot of the player that you are playing against, because the middle area, as we know, is, you know, the net's a little shorter in the middle. It's a little better to be defensive in the middle than it is to the sides. There's also no Ernie risk in the middle, and there's less angles for your opponents to work with from the middle. I think you're better off popping a ball up to the middle than you are to the side. You pop a ball up to the middle, it's actually easier for you and your partner to make something happen and defend that ball because there's less court for your opponent to hit into. If you pop the ball up to the sideline, they can go right down that line, they can go through the middle, and they can also go cross court. So generally when we're on defense, we want to put the ball to the middle. Quick tangent there, I'll move on. So how we do the drill is, if I'm slicing it, Max is moving me side to side within my box. So he'll make me reach for the backhand, he'll make me reach for the forehand. He's hitting topspin, and he's trying to move me around, trying to be aggressive. And I am hitting slice, so I'm just going to the same spot every time. I'm just going right into that middle until I can, you know, hopefully get a ball that I like to work with, makes it a little easier for me, and then I can impart topspin on my own. So then the inverse of that would be, I'm the one hitting topspin. So you, for example, you can go out there and you say, okay, I'm only going to hit topspin. My partner is only going to hit slice. I'm going to dink one ball to this corner and then one ball to the middle, and I'm going to go alternate, and I'm just going to be as aggressive as possible with these dinks, trying to alternate and move the dinks around, getting comfortable being aggressive with dinks off of slice, because your partner is going to be only slicing it right to the middle. And if somebody sliced a dink to the middle to you, or any sort of sliced drop or reset to the middle, it is, the onus is on you to be aggressive with that next ball, right? You want to be aggressive with it, and you want to try to move the ball as much as you can. What is all these reminders? I'm getting a bunch of reminders about things that are not related to this podcast. I'm sorry, guys. I got to be better than that. Okay. So anyway, that's why we do that. And that brings me to the next thing that I think we should all be super focused on when we play. And that is when we are trying to be aggressive with speed ups, I don't really think we should be hiding too often the fact that we are speeding up. All right, so guys, James Ignatowicz here. I'm here to tell you about Selkirk's newest creation, the Vanguard Pro. It's got vibration, absorption, thermoform. It's got four layers of 12K raw carbon, and I've tried it. It's an awesome paddle. Selkirk's always coming out with the best new stuff, and I've always tried every single new paddle that they've come out with. That's just because I'm addicted to trying new stuff, and Selkirk's always, you know, surprising me with new great paddles. So if you're anything like me, or if you just want to use a great paddle that's got great vibration, absorption, extra power, it had great spin and great control, felt like it had pretty much everything I wanted, make sure to try it. Vanguard Pro, awesome paddle, give it a shot. I think that happens way too much. Players are trying to hide that they're going to speed the ball up. They just make it look like they're dinking, and then at the last moment they do something crazy. I think there is a place for that. There's a place maybe to do that sometimes, but I think that what is more reasonable and I think more effective over the long term is you make it clear that you're going to speed the ball up, and you don't do it to make it obvious that you're going to speed up to the opponent. You just do it because that is how you feel most comfortable speeding up the ball. If there was no opponent there, so this is how I would tell you, you know, to practice speeding the ball up. If there were no opponent in front of you, somebody was just feeding you a ball, and all that you had to do was just hit a speed up and just make it. Just hit a speed up to a spot that you want to do, you want to hit to. What's the best possible speed up that you can hit? How would you speed the ball up? What would that technique look like? And I think for the most part, that's how you should be speeding up the ball. You shouldn't let the fact that there's an opponent in front of you, or the fact that you want to hide the ball, you know, hide how you're speeding it up, or hide the fact that you aren't even speeding it up at all. You shouldn't let that deter you from trying to hit the spot that you are trying to hit, trying to hit the speed up, how you want to hit it, where you want to hit it. Because at the end of the day, the most important part about speeding the ball up is not disguising the fact that you're going to do it. It is where you put that ball. It is where you put that ball. So if you watch the players that are the best at speeding the ball up, for example, guys like, you know, Gabe Tardio, Matt Wright, I'm pretty good at speeding it up, right? I mean, O'Reilly Newman, for example, Ben Johns. It is obvious that they're going to speed the ball up when they speed the ball up. And if you don't feel like watching the pros, which I would understand, and that's why I'm here to tell you. That's what the pros are doing. The pros are not making it, you know, they're not keeping it a secret that they're about to speed the ball up. The deception element and what makes it tough is you don't know where it's going. Okay, so you know that it's coming. You do not know where it is going. And I think that is essentially important because for me, when I'm speeding the ball up, it's pretty clear that I'm going to speed it up. I know I'm going to speed it up. My opponent knows. The ref might know that I'm going to speed the ball up, but only one of us knows where it's going. And I think that is where you get your advantage when you're speeding the ball up. The other thing there too is if I make it clear, and this is an important point, if I make it clear that I'm going to speed the ball up, right? Well, what does that mean? I make it clear I'm going to speed the ball up. I've got my paddle here. The only thing you know is that I'm going to speed the ball up. And I can actually, through maybe the corner of my eye, I mean, for me personally, I'm comfortable doing this. I can see the way that you move. Maybe somebody looks like they're going to sit backhand, or somebody looks like they're going to be super, you know, forehand heavy with their defense, where you can tell that they're starting to slide one way or the other. If you have a lot of time when you're holding that speed up, there is, as you get more advanced, this is a little more of an advanced tip, but you can actually have a tell what they're favoring and then do the other thing. So if I see somebody sliding really hard with a one-handed backhand or is about to speed the ball up, I'll go across their body, make them reach like this. So that's a little more of a, I would say, an advanced thing, and that might not apply to everybody, but that's something you'll probably be doing in the future if you plan on getting a lot better. So first step of that is just hit the best speed up you can hit. Focus on hitting the best possible speed up to the spot that you want to hit it to, and don't worry too much about whether or not it's coming, because lastly, as you get better and you play better and better players, it will be obvious that you're going to speed the ball up. It's very, very tough to hide the fact that you're going to speed the ball up. Players generally will know that a speed up's coming. There's only a few players who can successfully make it, you know, keep it a secret, so to speak, that they're going to speed the ball up. So just focus on hitting the best speed up that you can. Any questions? I'm just joking. There's nobody. There's no questions. I'm just talking to myself. I thought that'd be kind of funny. Okay, sorry. So let's see. What else am I going to talk about? I actually had a question. What is my favorite? Oh, this is a little corny. I guess I'll answer it because I don't really remember what else I was supposed to talk about for this one. I had a question, which was, what is my favorite thing about being a pro? Favorite thing about being a recognizable pro, people know who I am and whatnot. I mean, it's just pickleball. I'm not famous, but I guess in pickleball, I'm sort of like known. And I think it's a couple things. I think the first thing, probably, especially at the clinics and when I'm teaching people and working with people, is that my comments and my compliments mean a lot to people, which I think is cool. It's definitely something that is super rewarding. It's cool because, you know, it's not something that was always the case. Of course, compliments are always good, and when you're teaching somebody and coaching somebody, it's always good. But a lot of these times, it's really cool to see that when I go, you know, for a guest appearance at a clinic somewhere, and then I tell somebody that, you know, any sort of compliment, it just means a lot to them. And I remember that because when I was getting started and some, you know, top pro player would say something, you know, I remember, I won't call them out, but there was a pro player that said I had a really good two-handed backhand. And I was like, wow, that's crazy that they would say that. And it's kind of silly, I mean, but it is cool that I can just make people feel better about their games just by something that I would say, which generally, I mean, it's going to be something that I genuinely think and is honest. And yeah, just the fact that people still listen to me and they actually want to hear what I have to say is so crazy and so wild, and I don't take that for granted at all. And also for all the people that say that they watch the podcast, they see me in person, and they say that they are subscribed to the newsletter, subscribed to my YouTube channel, keep telling me at every tournament. It's my favorite thing to hear. It brightens my day every single time. There was a ton of people in New York City that said that, and it made me so happy. Sometimes I'm not great at expressing that happiness because sometimes I'm busy. If you've ever caught me at the tournament and I'm really, you know, super focused, I'm trying to get into the zone, and they'll say that they like the newsletter, I'm like, oh yeah, nice. Like, sometimes I maybe don't seem like I enjoy it, but always tell me. I might not always be able to connect with you as much as I want. That's one of the things that I was a little disappointed myself in. I'm not the best at connecting with the fans sometimes because I'm just in a rush and there's a lot of people trying to talk to me. But anybody that's subscribed to the newsletter, YouTube, or watch this podcast, just make sure to tell me. Even if I'm not the best at expressing my gratitude, trust me, it goes a long way. I love to hear that. So we're gonna give you guys another topic because I've been rambling about myself for 3 minutes now. Sorry about that. I mean, I guess it is my podcast. I can kind of talk about myself a little. No, so another thing that I really, really could not stress enough is that when you are hitting a drive, you watch the pros. I've been watching all of them. When you're hitting a drive, whether it's a forehand or a backhand, the best way to hit a drive is having your knees bent while you are hitting that drive. So a lot of players, they will bend their knees and they will stand up straight when they hit the drive. They think they should be driving their legs up into the ball. And that's what you do in tennis very often. In tennis, you have your knees bent, and then when you're about to hit the ball, you sort of come up and, get your body kind of going upward. And that's different because in tennis, height can be good. Anybody who's been good at tennis knows that if you hit a high, deep, I'm not talking sky high, but some good height over the net, a good deep top spin forehand is a good thing. So you do want maybe some leg drive upward because depth and height can make for a heavier, so to speak, ball in tennis. That's how they teach it. And of course, there's place for flat, but really you want top spin in tennis. In pickleball, lower is better. The best ball in almost any situation is one that goes an inch over the net. Think about that outside of maybe a return and a serve, maybe. But the best drive ever, hypothetically, best dink, best drop, best counter, is going as low over the net as possible. And for the drive, if you are pulling up your body like this, it doesn't help. Super common to see people raise up their head and raise up their legs when they hit the drive. I've hit my best drives almost solely when I'm focused purely on my legs being bent the entire time, just staying down through the entire swing, almost like you see in ping pong when they're ripping the ball in ping pong. They're just kind of turning their shoulders, they're keeping their knees bent. So this would be my call to action to the listeners. Next time you go out there and hit drives, I want you to exaggerate it and see what happens, because that's what I did, and I started hitting significantly better drives. Get out there and just exaggerate it. Have your knees bent the entire time. Get low and stay low through contact. Pretend like there's something an inch above your head and you don't want to touch it, right? And just see what happens. Exaggerate it and see what happens, and you might be hitting the best drives you've ever hit, because that seems to be a trend. That's all. Thanks for watching.